Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Hello and welcome to the Believe in Vanderbilt Football Podcast on the Believe Podcast Network, brought to you by betonline.ag. In the Music City, I'm Matt Perkins, and I'm joined as always by Ryan Seymour. On today's show, Ryan and I sit down with former Vanderbilt offensive lineman Jake Bernstein to talk about Sarah Fuller breaking the gender barrier in Power 5 football, the firing of Derek Mason, and what is to come next for the Commodores. But before we get started, we can't forget to... All right. Well, Ryan and I are back and have the honor of having former Vanderbilt offensive lineman Jake Bernstein on the pod with us tonight. Jake, thank you so much for spending a little bit of time with us here today.
Yeah, man, I'm excited. You know, hopefully we can keep these as entertaining as they have been. So thanks for having me.
The offensive line podcast.
We might as well be at this point. I mean... Yeah, might as well be called Believe in Vanderbilt Offensive Line, because that's basically what the show is. And you know what? I'm not mad at it.
You know, Matt, it's because these are the only guys that are like want to come on every week. I asked all these other DBs and linebackers, and they're like, oh, man, I'm busy, man. The linemen, the O-line, yeah, man, what time, dude? Let's make it happen.
Of course.
Have you had Wes on this?
No comment. I asked Wes, no comment.
He's too cool, isn't he?
No comment.
I don't want to hear that. I mean, come on, Wes.
Wes said he's not. He said he's not a radio guy. He said, bro, I'm not a radio guy.
What do you mean? Like, this ain't radio.
What does that even mean? What does that even mean, bro?
He was the face of Vanderbilt for years. How is that guy not a radio guy?
Big dog. He's a big dog.
He can't big dog when the fact is we've had Jordan Rogers, who's bigger than everyone on the show. Yeah. We've had Nate Bargatze, who's one of the biggest stand-up comedians in the world.
Love Nate. I was so jealous that Zach was doing that.
We can get Nate back. We'll get Nate back again. We'll get Nate back again.
Man, Gotta get him back. I listen to his stand-up constantly.
It's so good.
Anyways, his dad is the man. I mean, his dad came through Vandy all the time and would put on shows for us. And that was before they did renovations to like our old – you know, the old locker room and the old facility. But yeah, I remember seeing his dad doing magic shows at the facility all the time. He was awesome, man. Awesome. Love to get Nate back. Love to get his dad on here too. That'd be pretty special.
I think we can make that work, actually. I think we can make that work. We talked about doing a live show with him at some point too. So once this whole freaking COVID thing is over and we can actually have like crowds somewhere, we've talked about maybe going to one of the local breweries around Nashville. I'm thinking a little Bearded Iris, something like that. Maybe having a little live show.
McFadden's.
Dooley's.
Dooley's. Well, Jake, man,
hold on. Before we jump in with Jake, we got to remind you guys that we are brought to you by betonline.ag. Football season is winding down, and while you still can't be at most of the games unless you are the parent of a Vanderbilt athlete, you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. This weekend, Vanderbilt is underdogs by 35.5 points to Georgia, and honestly, that seems a little bit low. I'm surprised it's not in the 40s. But no matter who your team is, head on over to betonline.ag today to take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Again, that's betonline.ag to sign up today. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. All right, now we can get into the show.
Are you ready?
All right, we got my man Jake here. Number Jake, what was your number? 60. What was your football number?
53, man,
I came in at 63.
You can't remember?
I came in at 63, and I thought it was the fattest number ever, man. I don't know what it is, but.
No, 66 is the fattest number. 66 is the fattest number. I wore 55 just because
Matt doesn't know.
I wore 55 just because I did not think it was a fat
Aaron Kinsley, the swamp donkey was.
Well, I thought, you know, then I defaulted and said 57 might be the second fattest number, you know, but you already had that guy on the show, right? then I fell in love with 53, right? And 53 was just the number. That's good stuff.
We love Joe, man. If y'all haven't heard, that was a great one. Yeah, man. So, Jake, have you been keeping up with Vanderbilt lately? Have you seen what's going on in the news? What an interesting week it's been for all the fans, former players, guys who are, you know, currently on the team. We had Joe Fisher, you know, step away this week. We obviously had Coach Mason. We saw that what happened with Coach Mason with Candace letting you know, stepping away from that situation. And then we got the Sarah Fuller situation. So a lot of things going on this week. How is Vanderbilt going to bounce back from all of this, of all this coverage, man? Like, how are we going to bounce back from, like, you know, I feel like we took a big step this week, obviously with the, I don't want to say firing, it's such a harsh word, but like firing of Coach Mason. I mean, Matt and I kind of joke about this all the time. It can only go up from here, right? I mean, it can only go up from here.
I just want to hear your thoughts on.
Right. So let's hear Jake Bernstein's thoughts on this.
Okay. Yeah. You know, that's a lot of different areas of cover, but you know what? It's been tough to watch. You know, on the
weekends. I'm still working on my interview skills, Jake.
You're all good. I understand everything, but it's been tough to watch, right? You know, it hasn't been easy for fans to really kind of get into Vanderbilt football. I think that first game that when we opened up against A&M, it was promising, right? You know, all the way, right?
I mean, how exciting was it watching
it
Seals?
It was good, man. Especially, you know, A&M's a tough place to play, and I know that the crowd's not really there, but. You know, A&M right now is a national ranked team, right?
They're number six in the country, something like that. Like...
Exactly, right? And so it brought a lot of early hope, right? You know, as fans were sitting there saying, you know, maybe the offense can get going, but the defense is there, right? It's going to keep us in games. But then every game after that got tough, man. You know, there was times where I physically had to just walk away, right? And so, you know, the first part of the question, right, the you know, termination of Derek Mason, you know, it's,
was it the right timing for it? Let me ask you that before you kind of go into some of the reasonings. Was it the right time? You know, we got, how many games left? We got three games left.
Two games left.
We got Georgia and Tennessee. Yeah. Two games left.
Okay.
No, cause they swapped. So we were supposed to play Tennessee this past weekend and Mizzou next weekend. And they swapped those because of Tennessee's COVID situation. So we got Mizzou this past weekend, Georgia this weekend, which was always on the schedule, and now Tennessee on the 12th.
Yeah. So I'd like to hear
your thoughts, Jake, on the timing of it. So like, with two games left, was it the right time with the whole Sarah thing? Was, should he have got that contract extension? Should he even been coaching this year? Like specifically, I guess, how do you take the timing of this whole situation?
You know, I think it's a big move for Candace, right? I think to really show that, you know, she's stepping into a new role right? You know, willing to actually care about football, right? I think that's always been the biggest worry, right? With Vanderbilt fans and then especially alumni of the program, right? Is we've always waited till, you know, after the season to make a move. And, you know, I think it sets a good precedent for Candace to come in there and obviously, you know, remove and alleviate Derek Mason of his duties. But, you know, it's got to be tough because a lot of guys, you know, really built a liking players that were recruited by Derek Mason around Derek Mason, essentially. And you know, he's a very likable guy. He's a player's coach, right? And I think a lot of people probably inside of the program are upset, right? But I think right now for the program to go in the direction we all want to go in, right, you know, you got to look beyond, right? And so as unfortunate as it is, I think it was the best move to make to kind of already tell the fans, right, we're serious about football, right? We're actually going to, you know, have a full global search to find that replacement, right? And we're so serious about it, we're going to show you with the last two games left in the season that the interim coach is just an interim coach, right? The search is
Matt
going to
mentioned this is a power move for Candace.
Yeah, I think right. So too. I you know, on Sunday, Ryan and I were on the phone right after we found out the news. I was taking a nap. I woke up to literally no joke, 15 texts and 5 missed calls. And I was like, what on earth is going on? Is this a sky falling? No, Derek Mason was fired. And I said to Ryan that I thought this was a real power move by Candace. This was this is a proactive move, which is not something we are accustomed seeing from the Vanderbilt Athletic Department, the Vanderbilt administration, et cetera. Like you said, Jake, they are always doing it after the season. By doing it now, you get a leg up on the coaching search, and you are in the game. It's the same reason South Carolina fired Will Muschamp a week before Mason was fired. Yep. And in doing so, you get to see and you get to put the feelers out of who's really going to be available, right?
Yeah.
And who's really going to be out there and who's going to be interested in the program and who can we go after? I have a list of names that I'm interested in. Obviously, everyone has. You know, we can jump into speculation here in a minute, but I do want to talk a little bit more about Derek Mason first.
Yeah,
Derek Mason, from all accounts, is an absolutely wonderful human being. He seems to be. I mean, you played under him for a year.
Yep.
He seems to be a genuinely empathetic, caring, forthright, upstanding man. Who gives a crap about his players.
Yeah.
That, however, has not translated into success on the field for Vanderbilt. 7 seasons, 0 winning seasons. His best seasons were 6-7.
Yeah.
And that is not going to cut it in the SEC, which is as close as we have to professional football. That's not the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
On top of that, you know, I had a friend who was a Vanderbilt alumna text me. She's like, why did they get rid of Derek Mason now? I'm so upset about it because she loves the person of Derek Mason.
Yeah.
But SEC football is not about how good of a person are you. It's about, do you have the results?
Yeah.
Spot on. And we don't have the results, is plain and simple. I'm a season ticket holder at Vanderbilt. I have been since I moved back to Nashville. I've had season tickets for the past 3 years until this year when there have been no season tickets this year. I have season tickets to baseball. I have season tickets to basketball. I have season tickets to football. And I sat in the stands. I've brought this up so many times. Ryan's going to be sick of hearing about this. I sat in the stands last year when they lost by 20 points to UNLV. To a UNLV team that was so bad that they fired their own head coach before the end of that same season. But Vanderbilt didn't do anything. In fact, they gave him an extension. And it was then and there, it's like, what is anything actually ever going to happen with this? And I am honestly shocked that Candace Storyly did this. And I'm proud that she did this. I think that she has been feeling pressure because the new chancellor, Dearmeyer, has hired the assistant AD over from Louisiana Tech, who is an up-and-comer in the athletic administration world. And I think that she realized the heat was on her, that if she didn't do something, it was going to be her ass on the line, too. And the fact that she did this, I think, gives her some breathing room, but also gives her some clout at the same time. So I was, you know, surprised, but also in a good way that she did this early. And I think that it is, you know, I think that Derek Mason, like I said, on all accounts, good man, just not the right coach for this team at this time.
You know what? You hit a bunch of good points, but, you know, from a fan's perspective, right? Because, you know, Vanderbilt's had a hard time building upon its current fan base, right? You know, its current fan base is very loyal, but, you know, what's going to attract those new fans from buying into the program, right? Is a new face and excitement around the program, right? And so those programs out there, Matt, that make those big decisions, right, before the end of the year, right, show that they actually care. Right. And I think it's going to be interesting because there is a lot of great names out there and we could speculate, you know, who it could potentially be down the road. But, you know, I think for Candace, right, is she's inherited a situation at Vanderbilt that Vandy had a lot of good championship caliber programs. Look at the baseball program. Look at the women's soccer program now. You know, look at a lot of the other programs now that are finding success as of late. Right.
Women's bowling, baby. They're so good.
Bowling. Right. I mean, everything. Right. And so what are the other programs, right, that Candace can, you know, improve, right? And that's football, because that's been the Achilles heel of Vanderbilt for a very long time is, you know, how does Vanderbilt get rid of that stigma of just being Vanderbilt, right? And, you know,
it's
tough.
Every team, 6 wins to go to a bowl every year, you know.
Exactly, right? You know, we're all complacent with you know, beating Tennessee, right? We're complacent with, you know, winning 2 SEC games. Right. As a fan base. Right. And that's been
as a fan base.
Yeah. You know, but as players, see, and this is the worst part about it is, you know, we wanted more. We expected more because, you know, what went into it. Right. And, you know, the tough part with this is, you know, you have to be realistic with the expectations. Right. Is how much buy-in is the university going to put behind the athletics? Right. Because if the university starts to care, right, and show that, you know, hey, we hired the first, you know, female athletic director, right, to head up our athletic department, right? And now we're doing all these monumental things, right? You know, changing the narrative, right? She just came in and now she already fired someone within, you know, a couple months of being in her role, right? And so you sit there and say she's already making power moves to show that she's willing to put her, you know, her backing behind the program, right? Something that we haven't seen before. So, you know what? It's as much as we all love Derek Mason, I think it was a great move by Candace, right? And now it's just figuring out what that pool entails. And then also having that coach, whoever his successor is, be that Pat Fitzgerald type of guy, right? I think that's what Vandy needs, right? Vandy needs a guy who it could be a, you know, an alma mater, right? You could have been an alumni of Vandy, right? And is willing to stay at Vandy, right? Because he sees the opportunity, right? Or he sees that he's willing to change, or who it might be, willing to change the narrative, right? And so, you know, I think we're all optimistic and we're all excited to see kind of where this takes us in terms of a searching pool, right? And what that new head coach is going to bring whenever, you know, that day is announced. But I think for Candace, man, I think it's a great move, and I'm excited to see, you know, who that next head coach is going to be. So that's my take on it. See, how are you feeling about it?
Yeah, man, I just I don't want to keep, you know, beating a dead horse here. Obviously, I'm still just trying to wrap my head around the timing of this thing. More importantly about how did we get to this point? I was texting with Bruno earlier, and he was mentioning that we had another six or seven guys exit the team earlier this week. And really what I've been thinking about is not only, you know, obviously this season is a wash with COVID, the whole conference, the whole football community has just been, it's been a little different, right? And we've all been just trying to get adjusted to that a little bit. So, you know, the whole COVID deal is one aspect we're all just trying to handle the best we can. But how, you know, I just keep looking back and I'm asking myself, how did we get to this point, right? How did we get to the point where we've got over 30 guys over 30 guys either opt out or into the transfer portal or just flat out quit, you know, in one season. You know, we look at the average of these other SEC teams, it might be like, I don't know, Matt, maybe four or five guys. I think the average is maybe like five guys. We've had like over 30.
If that, and most of them are transfer portal because they're not getting playing time and not COVID opt-outs. Now,
so how did we get to this point? You know, that's the only thing that really is just, I just cannot wrap my mind around is after after this sixth losing season, you know, after not having a winning season after, you know, the seventh year now, I just don't see how we got to this point. Like, you know, people who know me, they know me. I've been calling for his job for the last 4 years. I mean, within the first two seasons, I knew this ain't it. I mean, I was in the facility. I was in meetings. I was sitting in position meetings, and I just was blown away. I was like, this ain't it. Like the narrative, the coaching styles, the techniques. I'm sitting there. I'm like, talking to Bruno. That's how I kind of built a relationship with Justin Schooley and Bruno, is I was like, bro, I don't know what to, I can't give you any tips that are going to conflict with what your position coach is telling you, but that's just not right. Like what they're telling you is wrong. You know,
it's likability, man. You know, the university fell in love with his hair, right? And
yeah.
And that's what kept him around. Right. I think, you know, Seymour, to build off your point, right? I think that the worst part about it is the university is complacent with a guy who has a good character, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, the winning aspect of it takes the back seat. It always will, right? Until, you know, you have someone who starts saying, you know, hey, we're in the SEC conference, right? You know, let's actually win some damn games, you know? And
he had to be a hell of a likable guy. He had to be a hell of a likable guy to begin, you know, to be you know, spitting out this message that, hey, I just need more time. Give me 4 years so I can get my own recruiting classes in here. You know, the whole coach splaining, I guess, as you could say, to an AD. I just don't see how we got to this point, man. I tell Matt, I tell all the other guests that come on here, it's been detrimental to this program. And we are going to be paying the consequences for years to come. It's going to be years, I feel like, before we're able to get back on track or maybe have to find some success. How are you going to go out and recruit 25? You know, it's like we barely even have enough to feed a roster this week. We got Sarah again, who's going to be doing the field goal kicks for Vanderbilt.
I'm excited.
Get into that in a second. Yeah. I mean, how did we get to this point, man? But I know I gotta let it go, and I know that's in the past, and we're looking forward, but I still will, even 10 years from now, I'll look back and be like, what the hell were we thinking?
We had the honeymoon phase. James Franklin.
We had the honeymoon. That's right.
As everyone says, you know, James Franklin came into the Vanderbilt program when the SEC was down, right? I was reading an article the other day. I think it was something that Kirk Herbstreit had mentioned, you know, saying that, like, you know, the SEC wasn't it what it was now, right? Florida had a couple down years.
Last time I checked, Tim Tebow was playing quarterback for Florida when James Franklin entered the SEC. So I don't think
the SEC. Thing.
Yeah, like, and like, even when the SEC is quote unquote down,
what is he talking about?
Well, on top of that, like, okay, when did he come in? 2010?
He came in 12.
No, right? Franklin. 11. Franklin came
Franklin
in 10.
Franklin came out in 2011 because I had him for 11. I had him for two seasons, 2011, 2012.
Okay. Yeah. I think Cam Newton had just won the national title. That Auburn team, they were pretty good.
Auburn was bad though the following year. You remember?
Well,
that?
Auburn was terrible the
following
year.
Well, that's when we played them at home. We played them at home and beat them. Then we beat Ole Miss on the road. What's the big wins that year, man?
Yeah,
the second half of the season was a lot stronger than our first half of the season.
Yeah, I guess that was post Tebow. That's my fault. But no, so
you know the worst part about that though, Matt, is we had a solid squad. You know that 11.
Y'all had good. Seymour. Y'all had some good. I mean, you guys had.
Yeah, don't take
Matthew,
that away from us, Matt.
One of the best years that I saw was the 11 year, and I was redshirted that year. But that was probably fundamentally, I think, the strongest team.
How many NFL players were on that team?
Seymour, that 11 year.
Well, 2011. Are you talking 2011?
Franklin's first year.
Franklin's
you had
first year.
Well,
so, I mean,
we had.
I think about it from a defense perspective. We had, I don't know if Chris Marv was still here. Tim Fugger was still here. Brandon Barden. I'm trying to think. Casey Hayward, Sean Richardson.
Offensively, yeah, you had Jordan Matthews, you had Zach, you had you, Ryan. Wesley was there. Wesley was still there.
Larry still was rotating.
Larry Smith. Yeah.
I mean, we've named at least a dozen NFL players right there.
That's what I'm saying. That was the most fundamentally the funnest team I've ever been a part of. I mean, they were.
I got my ass kicked in Cincinnati. Derek, I don't know if y'all know who Derek Wolfe is.
Oh, I know who Derek Wolfe is.
I know who Derek Wolfe is. Tackle for Denver, man. And, you know, I didn't know much about Cincinnati. And I was like, man, this is just going to be. It's gonna be a breeze, man. We're the SEC. Who is this Cincinnati coming down in Tennessee and thinking they're gonna show us up?
Who's that? Remember, like, right? Yeah,
dude. I remember meeting Derek. I think we were at a bar on whatever that like main strip is. Is it? It's not Beale Street. Is it Beale Street? Yeah, Beale Street in Memphis. And I remember like we were kicking it with some of the other team or with some of the team guys before the game. Like, this was on like a Monday, you know, we played on Saturday. So it was like, we had a whole week, right? Coaches kind of gave us a little bit of leeway on Monday and Tuesday night. And I remember seeing this Derek guy. I was like, man, that's kind of big, man. Like, you know, he says he's listed at 6'5", but this dude looks like he's like 6'7", dude. and so I'm like, all right, I'm juiced up. I'm ready for the game. And that guy whooped my ass. I'm telling you, he was just getting extension and shedding. He would just get extensions and shed, get extensions and shed. He didn't have
any first round draft picks. He was a first
round draft pick. He was a first round draft
pick. As a resume builder right there, buddy.
I'll never forget that damn Cincinnati game. I was like, that was the hardest bastard I ever played against when I was in college. People were like, who was the meanest guy you played against in college? Thinking like it was going to be some SEC guy. And I was like, y'all ever heard of Derek Wolfe? Like, that bastard was strong as hell.
Well, that's actually, you know, I'm gonna quick segue. Jake, who was the toughest guy for you to block?
The dude's on the Bears right now, Dan McCullers, man. Guy is he played at Tennessee. He was 6'8", like 400 pounds.
Oh my lord.
Like, this is why you need Wes on the show, because I kid you not, so we're playing Tennessee my junior year, right? My sophomore year, junior. So I'm getting all the things backwards, right? I'm lined up next to Wes Johnson, and this guy comes out, you know, because we're playing home against Tennessee that year, and we blew him out, right? And this guy comes on the field like when we open up the game, and he's just laughing, bro. And he sounds like Sloth from the Goonies, like, and I'm looking at Wes, and I'm like, I have this neck roll, man, that makes me actually look like Sloth from the Goonies, right? I'm sitting here like this. You know, look like a turtle, right? And so I'm sitting here and I'm like, this guy is a behemoth, right? Because we did a scouting report on this guy and we were just like, no one could move him, right? He just throw people, right? He's just always in the wrong position. So he would always win, right? So the first play of this game, we open up with the screen, right? Where Zach Stacy gets this ball and he goes like 90 yards.
Oh, you're talking about my senior year.
Was that it? Was that it?
Yeah.
You don't remember that?
That was us at home. I was just going to say, if you don't remember, when Jake played against Tennessee, the opening play was a screen on the right, and Jake had like a big first down block that opened up a huge hole that Zach ran at like 80 yards, but got knocked out at like the 5.
Yo, I thought it was next to Wes. It was it was next to you. No, I just remember like looking, and I was like,
dude, I was at left tackle, and you were at left guard. I was explaining this to Matt before the show. I said, Wes got bumped over to right. Jake was at left guard. I was at left tackle like the whole second half of the season against Ole Miss, against UT.
Yeah.
Against Wake Forest. I'm trying to think who else we played. But anyways.
Long story short, that was my senior year. So I wind up, basically. This ball gets snapped, right? And this is all kind of before we run on that 90-yard screen. And I'm hitting this guy, right in the chest plates, because he just stands up off the ball. I don't think this guy could actually, like, bend his knees, to be very honest with you. This guy stands up, man, and he's like the Terminator, right? He's sitting there taking shots in the chest like this. Just like rushing at me, and I'm sitting there. I'm just like, this guy is—he's just gonna throw me to the side. He threw me. I kid you not. Like, I got airborne, and somehow I'm on my feet, and I end up just like blocking no one, and we go for like 90 yards, and it was the most ridiculous thing ever, right? Zach's following me, right, and I'm sitting there leading the caravan, not blocking the soul.
He's leading the parade, man. Coach Han would say Jake was leading the parade. He's the guy with the front. With the big staff leading the parade.
Yeah.
I'm leading the parade. So long story short, this guy does not come in for the rest of the game. I think he came in like one third down play, and it was like third and goal, and he threw me again, right? It was one of those things. It was just like, you should leave this guy in the whole entire game. It was stupid for you guys to take him out. But the crazy part about the story is this guy comes back the following year because this guy was like rated on all the top boards because he's like 6'8", 400 plus, right? Comes back, loses like 75 pounds. Now this guy can actually bend his knees and get off the ball. And so it was scary the following year because I'm sitting there saying that I'm watching tape on this cat. And I'm like, this guy is just going to ruin me. Like, he's just literally just going to like throw me to the side. We played him and he was just throwing me aside. I was just trying to cut him off. Like, we were chop blocking this guy. We were post cutting this guy. We were just trying to set this guy up.
Chop blocks are legal.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
You know, you can't even do a peel block. You know, you can't even do a peel block anymore. Like, you can't even, like, if a guy doesn't see you coming, it's like a penalty or something now. Like, you can't even peel back in the guy. Crazy. And you damn sure can't throw and cut on the backside like we used to. I mean, I told Matt, I was I showed a clip of Logan Stewart. This guy just throwing and cutting on every single play. It was ridiculous.
My teammate, I would have loved him. If I was anybody else, I would have hated his guts.
Everyone hated Logan. Dreadman Logan. Yeah, you know, and it was crazy, you know, just playing some of these guys. Everyone was good. There wasn't one slouch, man. Every guy.
Yeah, so I don't know who's saying SEC was down that year, but
you know what? Everyone was good. Like Kelsey Quarles, man. I played against Jadeveon, right? I remember when you played against Jadeveon, right? I remember when Josh Gillespie played against Jadeveon Clowney and was like pulling the whole entire game and was like spewing out of his mouth because I think he was concussed or something, man. I mean,
yeah, that was the first game of the season.
Everyone was good. Like, there wasn't one bad guy. And that's the thing with SEC ball is you're always going to get the best out of everyone. You know, remember the guy from Tennessee, Mr. Cobble?
Yes,
you remember Mr. Cobble. this guy, Matt, he was like 6 foot, like 350 and had a high pitched voice. This guy was nuts, man. Like, you try to like get in front of this guy and he's like, oh, you got me, Jake. He's like, okay, lighten up. Okay, now.
So he sounds like Mike Tyson is what you're saying.
Without the lisp, yep.
Oh, my gosh.
That was how I played, though, right? Is I knew athletically I was at disadvantage. I mean, everyone you played against, man, was just superior athlete to you, right? You had guys like three times your weight that could still kick your butt. Right, but you had to get in these guys' heads to be able to calm them down.
Matt and I talked about in the previous weeks. It's just how like, and we'll get into this in a second. How how freaking soft I feel like the program has become. I feel like we were just so much meaner, tougher guys. Just wanted to get their hand in the dirt. Okay, so we'll kind of transition into like speaking of being soft.
Yep.
All right. So. Last week, we heard the rumors and which came to be true is that Vanderbilt was recruiting female goalie Sarah Fuller to come and kickoffs for the team. We spoke about this a little bit last week, Matt and I did. Obviously, we have no issue with that as long as we feel that was the best, the best qualified person for the job, right? I mean, I've seen a ton of interviews this week. There's been a lot of speculations about this being a PR stunt. You know, why couldn't they have just asked the team, hey, has anyone ever kicked here before? And I'm sure 10 guys would have raised their hands, kick a pooch kick, I think I have a good feeling that you and I probably could have achieved that. But that's not what I want to talk about. What I want to talk about is after the game she was being interviewed and I saw an article where she said that she gave a speech at halftime and that she was basically ripping the guys' asses for not being like loud enough on the sidelines. I just was thinking like, I mean, imagine anyone, let alone Sarah, imagine anyone coming into your locker room and being like, come on guys, we gotta pick it up. I mean, I just am like, hey, what? Gil,
I've been there. I've been there, and I've cracked when I've done that before, man. My voice was like, hey, come on, guys.
God, we got to show this clip.
Tennessee week, right? You know, my senior year.
Matt, come on, guys. Jake has a clip on YouTube where he goes, come on, guys. I don't want to go on a loser.
You know, it was one of those things where I was like, if I scream, right, and I just show some enthusiasm, I think people might like this, right? They might respond. You know what? And I just got backlash from immediately, bro. I think I turned off everyone in the room, right? You know, everyone's sitting there just like almost like looking at me with their eyes.
Chair. Yeah.
Oh man, but hey, to answer your point, is it a PR stunt?
Yeah.
You know what? I think
what's going on with that? Go ahead.
I think you know, it's an interesting move, right? I think, you know, obviously the dynamic in the world is changing, right? I think you know, it's ultimately, I'm a big fan of it, right? I think I don't think it's anything to do with a PR move. I think it's more so it's showing the world that times are changing. You know, there are opportunities for individuals of different genders to pursue gender-specific sports, right? And I think that opens up, you know, many people's perspective to continue to pursue things they love, right? I mean, think about how many youth girls play football, right? You know, that eventually they just stop playing because they just don't, you know, lack of better words, mature the same as a male. But, you know, this creates opportunities for females to continue or other genders to continue to pursue those dreams and ambitions, right? And I think Sarah is a pillar, you know, obviously, hopefully for change to come down the road. Could anyone have done it? I, you know, Seymour, I've kicked the ball, yeah, man. And
I guess it's not, you know, that's not the point I was trying to make, is that anybody could do what Sarah did on Saturday. Yeah. My point being is that I just want to make the argument that was Sarah the absolute best option for that opportunity. And that's kind of really what I just was trying to stress. Not that I like have anything against women playing in sports. You're absolutely right. This is a pillar, you know, an absolute fantastic thing for sports in general to bring, you know, to mix genders into a different sport that historically has been male dominated, you know. And Sarah mentioned in her interview, she said, this is for all the girls out there that wanted to not only play football, but for any girl who ever had any aspirations of playing any other sport, but was told, you know, you're a female and can't play. So, yeah. Right. We all love that. Right. And so we're all super happy for Sarah. You know, I just will always have that kind of question in the back of my mind. Was there other options? Was this the best move? Or is it just like you said, was it just maybe an opportunity for whether that was Mason or Candace, whoever made this decision, to kind of make a big splash and bring some attention to Vandy? And that's when I keep raising my eyebrow. Well, that doesn't make sense. Like, why would we want to bring attention to us on a team that we got blown out? You know, we got skunked. So I don't know, man. There's just so many questions I have about that move. And obviously we're going into the second week now. I was told that she's going to be the lone kicker this week. She's going to do the kickoffs and the field goals again this week. So we're going to see. I mean,
well, you can't say again with field goals because she didn't even get a chance to kick a field goal last week.
She kicked the field goals. Yeah,
we were all excited to see some. I think viewership was probably up just to watch her kick.
Well, and right? I think honestly, that's part of the reason.
That's why
that,
I'm like, what is up? That's why I don't understand. That's why I don't understand this move. But go ahead.
So I don't. I think that's part of the reason Mason kind of got canned. Honestly, you make this big hubbub about we're going to play the first woman in Power Five football. Awesome, wonderful. We're all rooting for her. We all want her to succeed so badly. So we have, 10 times as many eyes on the game. I mean, this is an 11 a.m. kick on SEC
Millions of viewers are tuning in. Hillary Clinton tweeted about this.
Everybody's tweeting about this.
Russell Wilson tweeting about this.
Everybody
was tweeting about this.
I mean, everybody's tweeting about this. And can't even get in field goal range. I'm not saying even shows you can't kick an extra point then get in the end zone. You can't even get in field goal range.
You couldn't get in red zone. Could not get in field goal range.
And we knew that, you know, she's a goalie, so she's going to have a big leg as far as women's soccer players go, right? So that some people go, why don't you get like a striker? Well, no, a goalie's going to have the biggest leg. B, like, she's 6'2", and I've watched some of her goalie highlights. She's not afraid to go out there and hit somebody. Like, they could have used her at middle linebacker, too, last week. Like, let's face it, there was nobody, nobody was really out there chasing the ball. I've seen some of her highlights. She's not afraid to go up and get the ball in traffic and knock some other girls over. Yeah. So they could have used her there, too, quite frankly. But
I was dogging her a little bit there, Matt, because I think you made a point there that I kind of failed to touch on. You know, we're only focusing on her kickoff, right? We did not have an opportunity to see an extra point. And that kick was designed to be a pooch punt. Like, everyone knows that was designed to be a pooch kick. So that is one thing I kind of failed to touch on, was that we actually never really got an opportunity to see her full leg and to see how well of an actual place kicker she could have been, because unfortunately, Vanderbilt never gave her the opportunity.
I watched her in warmups. She was hitting them pretty consistently from like 35, 38 yards. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I have no doubt if they got inside the 20, if they got in the red zone, she's going to make a field goal.
Do you think kind of the initial point I brought up at the beginning when we started talking about Sarah was, how much do you think pressure was on Sarah in that locker room as a voice of the program, or someone who's, you know, been asked to come in here to kind of assist or help out the team? That was kind of the one thing I was raising my eyebrow a little bit. And I had a group chat with some of the guys that I played with about, you know, how do you think these guys took that as a, I don't want to say an outsider, because she's a Vanderbilt athlete, but, you know, someone who had come in, hasn't been there in 2 days, hasn't been there the whole season, you know, has been here for 4 days to come in and make a halftime speech. Like, what do you think the conversations were like in the locker room? And that's like, no bull. Like, do you think guys were receptive of it? Do you think there was some backlash, a little bit of both?
I think it really depends on the source, right? Is the source saying that she went in there and said something? I mean,
she said she has. I mean, she's quoted saying that, like, yeah, I went in there at halftime and asked a few guys if I could make a speech. And she said that the first thing I said was that you guys are not bringing enough energy on the sidelines. We need to pick it up. And there was a few other things that were said that I can't remember, but because I don't want to misquote her. But,
in terms of being receptive, I think, you know, ultimately someone needs to say something, right? I don't think it really matters of the voice it's coming out of, because apparently if you're a fan and you've been watching the past couple of weeks, those locker rooms are probably dead silent. I'm sure nothing's being said in there, because when they go in the locker room at halftime, they come out even flatter than they did going into the game, right? So, you know, I applaud her if she did say something, right? And I applaud those who actually listen, right? Because, you know, it's every single time you see them go in the locker room, you just hope that it doesn't get worse than it actually did, right?
Do you think she was pressured to do that? Or do you think, like, that was a self move? Or do you think that perhaps coach was maybe feeding her a message like, hey, Sarah, it's on you at this point. Like, not only were we bringing you in to, you know, assist with the kicking responsibilities, but maybe she was getting fed the message like, hey, you're going to be like the life of this team. You know, obviously we all know this is going to bring some attention. So like all eyes are going to be on you this week. I think that's interesting. I think that is interesting. I think if I was in Sarah's shoes, you know, I might have done the same thing, right? You know, you kind of come in and you do have all this national attention. Maybe you're just feeling like almost obligated, or I don't know. I just do think that was very interesting, you know?
It's interesting to hear.
It shows guts, for sure.
Yeah, most definitely, right? I mean, you know, taking a foreign, you know, environment, right? Especially being in a male-dominated environment and trying to say something that could actually, you know, get aroused in someone. You know, I've been there, and I'm not going to lie, firsthand, it's tough to actually to say anything articulate in front of other people, especially just at least have a sentence in the moment. I applaud her if she actually, you know, if she said something, you know, that others have listened to, because, you know, I didn't have the courage to do it. So she obviously has more courage than I. And when I actually did say something, it didn't make much sense. It was just a lot of screaming and spitting.
At the end of the day, though, to be fair, she's the only SEC champion in that locker room.
That's true. So, you know, she can be holding up her belt saying, I'm a champion, and what are you guys going to do about it? You know, I would get super crazy. I would be like, yeah, I want to be a champion. And then you know, I'd probably die there.
Someone,
but...
someone tweeted on Saturday, Sarah Fuller has entered
the transfer portal. Yeah.
I saw that as well.
That was pretty good.
I hope she can get a kick in this week. I really hope she can, man. I was rooting for it last week, and it's unfortunate we didn't make it really past the 50-yard line that whole entire game. But hopefully this week we do something miraculous. You know, maybe we catch Georgia off the guard right in the first couple series, and we get in there and we kick a field goal, and she shows her talents in front of the whole world. So.
I mean, I don't know if you've seen Azeez Ojulari play for Georgia's defense, but there's no one on the Vanderbilt team that can block him whatsoever. So I'm afraid for who's ever playing quarterback at Vanderbilt. Seals was pulled for a couple of series last week. They brought in Mike Wright, who is a dual threat guy, and they just had him drop back. That's another thing I did not understand. The play calling this whole season has been questionable. And we'll just leave it at that. Let's look forward. Let's look forward.
Agreed.
Obviously, a lot of the talk is who's next?
We all know this.
Who's next? Who's the next guy? Okay, Jake. Candace Storyly has hired you to lead up the team to pick the next head coach.
I'm glad you asked this, Matt. I'm glad you asked.
Vanderbilt. Before you give me a name, give me like two or three qualities or like personality types or experiences that you are that you think are essential to being successful at Vanderbilt. And then give me a couple names that you think have those qualities and you think would be successful.
Yeah. Like what are you hoping these guys are going to bring? Not just as far as coaching experience, but like what other qualities are they going to bring that's going to completely change the narrative of Vanderbilt? Someone who's going to be able to come in and get things done, facility upgrades, like, make sure we kind of take those things into account as well.
Yeah, no, that's a good question, both y'all. So, you know, what I would be looking for, right, in a pick, right, is I'd be looking for a guy who has that blue chip mentality, right? Coaching Carousel out there, there's a lot of young coaches that have a lot of pizzazz behind them, right? But they view Vandy as just a stepping stone for their bigger opportunity, right? And so I think if I am choosing a coach, right, I'm choosing a coach who has that blue collar, right, who's going to bring his lunch pail to work, who's going to buy into the program because he sees that as his only opportunity to be successful, right? You know, then to parlay off that, I'm looking for a guy who's a silent leader, right? I think Vandy has had, with the past two coaches, right, I think James Franklin and Derek Mason have been charismatic, have been very I wouldn't say loud in their voice, but you know, more of just trying to get like the public persona behind the program, right? I think Franklin was a very good orator, right? And he was able to kind of corral individuals to buy into what he was saying, right? And Derek Mason kind of built upon that, where he was trying to you know, say, hey, you know, Vanderbilt is not just, you know, that academic school, right? We're going to compete in this, right? Listen to what I'm saying to you, everyone, like that. So what am I looking for, right? What did CJ say?
I don't know, because Seymour's audio is way out of sync with us right now.
Will you get off that dial-up connection, C?
Yeah, seriously, bro, are you?
Bro, I'm on the iPhone, bro. My wife's laptop's out of commission right now. We just ordered a new one. We're gonna get that audio Gucci next week. Bro.
Okay, so now you're good. Ask it again.
Ask the question again.
Oh, it wasn't a question. You were just saying how Mason and Franklin were both outspoken guys, and I just threw a little comment in there about Mason's first day on the job was SEC championship, here we come. That was literally like Mason's first words out of his mouth, and I was just
right? But then a couple years later, he's saying, "Oh, we can't expect to go to bowl games every year," and so
don't even get me started on that.
Realism hit, right? Where you finally understood that it's not that easy to win.
It only took that long. Right?
You know, but back to the point, right? It's more so I'm looking for a silent leader, right? I'm looking for someone who's just going to chip away, right? Someone who is going to prove, right, their worth instead of just basically speaking louder than the other person so that they can actually get a word in, right? That being said, I'll jump into exactly who I'm looking at, right? I love Barry Odom. Right. I think if I'm looking at coaches out there that and I'm gonna go back to that Pat Fitzgerald mode. Right. I think what makes me love Pat Fitzgerald so much, and I'm a Chicago guy, so I got to, you know, root for them. Right. And everyone in Chicago does, especially with their recent success. Pat Fitzgerald is not only alumni of Northwestern. He's a guy who's bought into the program and he doesn't see any other opportunity out there for him. Right. And he's just going to solely develop that program. And look at what he's done. He's just got the university to buy him $300+ million to dump into their athletics to build athletic facilities to compete with everyone else.
Well, because in the Big Ten, they need it, because Ryan Field, in comparison to the rest of the stadiums in the Big Ten, is in the same place that Vanderbilt Stadium is in comparison to the rest of the SEC. Because fair. Northwestern's facilities, in comparison to the rest of the Big Ten, are at the same place that Vanderbilt's are in comparison to the rest of the SEC. So they needed that. And and on the flip side, Northwestern has also bought in to Pat Fitzgerald at Correct. The same time. They have invested in him. And how has that been rewarded? They were in the top 10 as recently as 2 weeks ago. So
I know. And then that was a debacle. That was sad to see, especially rooting for the hometown team, right? But to build off your point, Matt, right? When you look at Pat Fitzgerald, he's a blue collar guy, right? He's a guy that is going to get those recruits, right? And those recruits are going to work those butts off, right? Their butts off to be spectacular, right? He's an X's and O's guy. He knows how to beat teams that he should beat, right? And look at Northwestern the past, gosh, how long has Pat Fitzgerald now been there? 10+ years?
12, 13 years, something like that. He's the second longest tenured head coach in the Big Ten after Kirk Ferentz.
Basically runs frickin' Evanston over here, right? He can practically do whatever he wants. And the point is, this guy has the keys to the city. But what I'm trying to mention is Vandy needs some guy like that, right? They need some guy that's going to come into the program that doesn't see Vanderbilt as a stepping stone, right? That doesn't get afraid of losing a couple games, right? That isn't afraid of telling a recruit that, hey, if you don't pull your grades up, you can't get into this school, right? And that's the thing with Northwestern, right, is they're very particular with who they recruit, right? You have to have the academics to justify why you could go into the university, right? I think when James Franklin was there, he started making exceptions, right, to recruit those, you know, those kids that don't really have the best grades, right, but are just phenomenal athletes to come into the program and see if what they could do. The point is, I think a guy like Barry Odom could go after those guys, right, and recruit those Vanderbilt type of athletes. So what are we looking for? We're looking for those guys that understand that, you know, if you don't go pro, right, you're going to be successful for the rest of your career. You know, but how do you pitch that to an 18-year-old kid? That's not my job. You know, that would be the head coach's job. You know, so Barry Odom would be my number one pick right now. My number two pick is Clark Lee, if I'm pronouncing his name correct, the Notre Dame defensive coordinator. He's an interesting guy, considering he's a Vanderbilt alumni. And he also, I believe he played football as a walk-on fullback or a scholarship
fullback
guy.
Yeah, he was a fullback.
So there could be some loyalty and some ownership there, right? There could be a guy who wants to be that first guy to take Vanderbilt where it could be, right? Who could build the program from the ground up. You know what? I think if Vanderbilt goes younger, I think then we risk a bigger problem. We risk another James Franklin situation, right? Of the guy looking always past, looking for the bigger opportunity. Right. And as we all know, Vanderbilt's not afraid to pay someone. Right. I believe Franklin turned down $50 million and probably 200% job security. Right. you know, just to go to Penn State. Right. Yeah. I don't blame him. I don't. Right. Because
he's from Pennsylvania.
He can get things done, and he has the university buy-in. And I think that's where it struggled. Right. But that university buy-in takes time to get. And you have to win, right? I'll do it again. The Pat Fitzgerald mentality, right? Playbook is what Vanderbilt needs to follow. It's just finding a guy who's going to believe in it.
Real quick, Jake, what did Vanderbilt learn from the tenure of Derek Mason? I think that's something we also haven't talked about, is that as we start to look for new head coaches, and obviously we're, you know, everyone is very excited about this new opportunity and excited to see who we're going to bring in. What has Vanderbilt learned, I guess, from the tenure of Derek Mason? What sort of mistakes do we not want to repeat if, for say, we do bring in a coach and maybe we do start to see a relapse of the last 7 years? I mean, would you do things differently, Jake, I guess, is what the question I'm asking?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I think, you know, the biggest mistake, right, is hiring coordinators, right? I think the issue is with that, it's a big gamble. Right. You don't know what you're going to get out of some guy, especially when you ask him to lead a program when he's never been asked to lead before. Right. I think that's first and foremost. Right. Not every pick is going to be a James Franklin pick. Right. And I think we're starting to learn that. Right. From, and I'm not discrediting Derek Mason at all. I think Derek, he's a phenomenal guy. I loved playing for him. Right. But I think it's the coordinator stigma. Right. We're not going to get an Ohio State coordinator. Right. We're not going to get a marquee top pick, right? Because they just won't find Vanderbilt attractive enough. But what we can get is a proven head coach at, say, a lower division, right? Or a lower level, right? Or you can get a proven head coach who basically, you know, was relieved of his duties and now is a coordinator, right? Someone who has the track record of leading a program, right? I think that's what Vanderbilt needs, right? And I think the mistakes, you know, are saying, look at what's out there. There's tons of picks. Just go ahead and vet these guys and see if they fit what you're looking for, right? I'm looking at the coaching pool out there, and I'm seeing tons of able guys.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Better than I think the pool. I think the pool is better now than it was 7 years ago when Franklin left and they were looking for a new hire for Vandy. Do you think any former Vanderbilt Franklin alumni might make their way back to Vandy? Like, for instance, do you think like maybe like Brent Pry, or are they saying that what's his name in Michigan, Matt?
Evan Gattis. Or Josh Gattis. Evan Gattis used to play for the Braves.
Yeah.
Josh Gattis.
Yeah. Josh, yeah, you think, yeah, Josh Gattis,
Chris Marv,
or Brent Pry, or
that, that's an interesting shot.
Right, yeah, that a coordinator yet though.
Yeah, you bring up good points, right? But it's still the coordinator stigma, right? You need a guy to be proven, right? You need a guy who has that track record of leading, right? You know, some coordinators out there are asked to call the shots, right? And the head coach is just giving the thumbs up, right? You know, those are a dime a dozen school, right? But, you know, a lot of these guys out there, the names that you had mentioned, you know, where have they been asked to lead, you know, a 100 plus guys, right? And especially in a situation like this, right? This isn't a situation where you have a playbook for success, right? Either your career gets started at Vanderbilt or your career dies. And it's one of those things where I'm excited to see whoever they bring in, right? Because I think there's a serious opportunity for someone to build something remarkable and build a change in the program that we've never seen before, right? I think Candace...
Appreciate you, brother.
Yeah, exactly, right? You have the AD now who is... a former student athlete, right? Who knows what it's like to go through that Vanderbilt stigma, right? Of not really having the university behind you, right? As an athletics, as a student athlete, right? And so now when you finally get the, you know, someone in a role to kind of mend the two together and mesh them like Candace, I think that the sky's the limit, right? You just got to find someone to plug in the role and have them run, and then you're going to have everyone behind you. So, you know, and I'm as optimistic as everyone else is out there. See,
good deal, Matt.
I mean, I think you bring up a lot of good points, and I think that Barry Odom is someone I hadn't considered a ton. I'd been looking towards some lower level, some group of five coaches a little bit more. I'm a really big fan of Billy Napier. He's the head coach at Louisiana. He's turned that program around. I know a lot of fans, at least, are big fans of Will Healy, who is currently at Charlotte, but before that was at Austin Peay. Intern Austin Peay, which had historically been probably potentially the single worst school in all of FCS football, into a playoff team in FCS, into a winner. Yep. And that's saying something. Some people like Chadwell, who's the head coach at Coastal Carolina. I'd be a little bit more that he's kind of a flash in the pan at the moment. But, you know, I think that Odom is a really interesting choice. The other guy that I've considered, I don't know if he'd be interested in, is Blake Anderson, who's the head coach at Arkansas State.
Okay.
And he's turned Arkansas State into a winner. And before him, Arkansas State had like 4 or 5 head coaches in 4 or 5 years, a lot of turnover, and he stabilized that program. And he's been to the Sun Belt Championship darn near every single season he's been at Arkansas State. Mm-hmm. And he's had success in similar part of the country, right? Arkansas is just hop, skip, and a jump west of, I mean, Jonesboro, Arkansas. Yeah, not exactly like, not Nashville, Tennessee, but still, you know, it's the Mid-South. It's dealing with a lot of the same recruiting territory. Now, obviously, Vanderbilt's going to be more of a national program than Arkansas State, But I've also seen people talk about someone like Willie Fritz. And had our former guest, Jake Crane, who's come on the show before, talk about, should Vanderbilt move to something like a triple option? And
what?
As an offensive lineman, we know that is not the best idea.
Terrible idea.
That is, yeah, that hurts. That pains me, man, that you would mention that.
I don't believe that's the correct answer. I don't believe
that's Georgia Tech's no longer Georgia Tech.
No, it's Georgia Southern. It's Georgia Southern.
No, I mean, you know, 4 years ago or whatever.
So I think it's a gimmick. I don't think it doesn't work in Power 5 football. The triple option doesn't work in Power 5 football. It works at military academies because they can't get road graders, right? Yeah. You can't be at a service academy if you're over like 280 pounds. Yeah. So you're not going to get your 6'8", 340-pound left tackle playing at Navy. So you have to run triple option. But at the end of the day, it's a gimmick. And in the SEC and high-level football, they're going to blow that up because it's predicated on the fact that the other teams, even if they have the athletes, they won't be smart. Well, the SEC athletes are even better and smart enough to completely blow up whoever is blocking them and completely annihilate the quarterback at the point of attack. And so it doesn't even matter if you get it out there. Plus, that kills off recruiting so much. No receiver is ever going to want to come play in a triple option. No, you know, you're
Calvin Johnson. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, well, he is the exception that proves the rule, right?
Right.
Yeah, he bends the rule. So, I get it. It's fair. You know, there is a lot of interesting picks out there, Matt, right? You know, and there's also a lot of proven head guys, right? I think to build off your point of other guys out there, Charlie Strong's still an interesting pick, right? I like a guy like Charlie Strong because I think Charlie's still waiting for that opportunity, right? And I know he probably doesn't have the best record as of late, right? But, you know, you look at a guy like Charlie Strong, right, and you talk about building, you know, a program around, I wouldn't be opposed to it, right? Right now he's we're at South Florida, if I'm not mistaken, and he's recruited
South Florida.
Yeah, he's recruited the south eastern part of the country very well, right? When he was at Louisville,
Florida,
right?
Especially, yeah.
Florida, right? Florida.
He's a guy who has ties in Miami-Dade and Broward County where so many athletes come out of.
Exactly, right? So you look at someone like that, right? Simply from the aspect of recruiting, you know, he could be a stellar pick, right? There's a lot of guys out there, right? I'm interested to see who Candace brings in, right? I think that's going to be the fun part. But you also got to, you know, a guy like Will Healy scares me, right? Because, you know, he could view Vanderbilt as a stepping stone, right? He's young in his career, right? He probably wants the bigger Power 5 school, right? And I'm not saying, you know, Vanderbilt is still a Power 5 school. It's just, it's not a marquee program like an Alabama. It's not a marquee program like an LSU or Ohio State or something like that. And that is the issue, right? A lot of these guys just see that as the next step for them to build their credibility to get to that even higher level. I think you got to go older route. I think you got to find someone who's been proven out there. You got to find someone who is comfortable in their career, but is still willing to push and drive to build something. And we'll see what Candace draws up, man.
Interesting points. Well, we're going to kind of wrap up here at the tail of the show. Usually we have some final questions for our guests. I'm going to take it a different route tonight. I want to hear Jake's. So for all the Nashvillians, I guess, who are out there listening, what was Jake's, if I just wanted to go down and grub and get me a good ass meal, where was your, what was your top spot in Nashville as a former offensive lineman? You know, we still got that fat man for everyone. We still got that fat man that lives inside of us. That'll never go away.
He will never go away.
Probably dropped some pounds. I've dropped some pounds.
Yes.
Never going to go away.
Yes.
What's Jake Bernstein's best night on the town as far as grubbing?
Damn. You know what? Hey, so I haven't been to Nashville for a little bit, so I'm sure it's probably changed a hell of a lot.
It's changed.
Yeah.
It's changed. It's like so much.
Miniature New York right now, right?
It's insane. It's absolutely insane.
You probably don't even have a southern.
Everyone's moving. Everyone's moving from New York, Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Moving from Chicago, New York.
Literally from Chicago, especially. Everybody moves here from
Florida, man.
Everybody moves from Chicago.
bunch of delis popping up. And
listen, Nashville. my college roommate who's from my college roommate who's from Chicago just opened up a bagel company in Nashville, and it's blowing up. It's huge.
Dude,
huge.
Why did I think of that? His
orders are sold out through Christmas right now.
Bernstein's Bagels.
Hey, Matt, what are you still doing on this podcast? You should work with this guy.
I don't know what I'm doing. I mean, he's a smart dude. He's got an MBA from Vanderbilt, so he's no dummy. But
yeah, come on now. So to answer your question, right? Where am I going, right? You know, so I actually went down to Nashville last summer with a girlfriend, and we went to Urban Grub. You know, Urban Grub is my go-to, right?
Yes.
If I'm looking to drop, $100 within the first like two seconds, Urban Grub is my spot, right? But to Seymour's point, right, what he mentioned earlier, I got to keep it kosher. I love Nashville. Nashville is my go-to, right?
Not even a thing anymore. Nashville doesn't even exist.
I'm not a Nashvillian. I don't even know that. Wait, I thought they had one in Green Hills.
Well, I don't know. The Nashville on Broadway, the one there that's right behind
that one close.
Yeah, they
have one in Green Hills, I think, right?
Oh, man. See, I didn't know that.
There's one in Green Hills.
Okay. That's the spot, right?
Yeah, it's right next to Bluebird.
That's what I thought.
It's right next to the Bluebird, yeah.
What the hell am I talking about? I don't ever go to Green Hills, I guess.
Yeah, neither do I. But I do know it's there.
Right?
Yeah, I don't know. The malls over there. I gotta get my wife away from there.
Pastrami sandwich. pastrami sandwiches.
Pastrami and rye, man. It can't go wrong.
Exactly. Right. That's how you know Nashville's changing. Those are the spots right there. Urban Grub and Nashville. Keep it simple.
Urban Grub is the shiz, man. I like Urban Grub because there's not as pretentious as M Street. You can actually get a reservation on OpenTable. I don't even know if y'all knew that, but you can get a reservation on OpenTable versus like M Street, Virago, Whiskey Kitchen, Tavern, Cane Prime. You have to call and get it through like their reservation service, which is, I think, is bullshit. But but anyways, I have to agree with you. I think Urban Grub is an absolute great spot.
I'm very lucky. One of my good buddies' girlfriends is a waitress at Whiskey Kitchen, so we can get him whenever we want.
I know Matt Perkins. Matt Perkins.
He's my guy, right?
No.
I'm name dropping.
Name drop, yeah. My name is not going to get you very far.
Yeah, and then they go like this. Yeah. They scratch their head saying,
Like if
sure,
like,
it's a 2-hour wait. It's a 2-hour wait. Sure, it's a 2-hour wait.
Who? Back in the line, please.
Yeah, back in the line. Wait.
Good stuff, man. Good stuff. Dude, well, obviously we've got, you know, a ton still to come. Obviously, we've got to finish out the rest of this season. We've got the interim head coach stepping in. Obviously, it's gonna be exciting to see an offensive mindset these next 2 weeks. We got Sarah. We all got our fingers crossed that Vandy's going to put it in field goal range to see her not going through. Another small note this week, we saw Joe Fisher, the voice of the Commodores, step down this week, going to get himself, you know, some help, man, which is just awesome. He's such a great dude, man. One of the best cats, great personality, super loving guy, always super like jolly around the facility. So we all, you know, thinking about him and wishing him well. So yeah. We got a lot of stuff going on. Excited to see these next few weeks with, you know, who the new head coach might be. Obviously a ton of speculations out there. We're all just kind of holding our breath, you know, hoping that Candace doesn't just drop some name that everybody's like, what?
Listen,
quarterback coach?
If she hires Will Muschamp, man, I'm just gonna
Interesting pick, though. I'm glad you mentioned that. I was going to say that. I still love the guy. I think X's and O's, man. I think the guy needs an opportunity.
He's had plenty of opportunities.
Bring him to Vandy. Hey, he's undefeated. He's undefeated against me.
Well, Vandy hasn't beaten South Carolina in forever. For some reason, like South Carolina owns Vandy,
just
and I don't
can't
understand.
Get it done.
Yeah.
And then what's an upgrade? An upgrade is taking the coach who used to beat you every year. That's an upgrade. So,
listen, I'm okay, but I'm okay as long as they don't hire Hugh Freeze. the only person I don't want is Hugh Freeze.
That's a gamble, man. I'm curious to see what
I just think he's scummy. I just think he's supremely, supremely scummy.
It's fair. But, I mean, Liberty signed him to a big extension there. How do you feel about that?
I think that's a match made in their version of heaven. I have my own thoughts on the administration and especially the president of Liberty University that we will save for a podcast that is not family friendly.
Curious to see that.
Isn't family friendly? You didn't tell me that when I signed up for this, man.
Let's put it this way. The episode with Joe definitely was not family friendly. I spent more time in post-production on that episode than I would done usually like 10 episodes combined.
Censoring
Joe.
Sitting here.
So,
hey man, let me tell you what, man. If I was the us Hendersonville boys to come down there, we show Vanderbilt a thing or two. Let me tell you what,
them taters, man, we the best. Yeah.
Oh man, Jake, man, it was a pleasure, dude. Thank you so much for coming on tonight.
Yeah, boys,
a lot going on. Excited to see where the future holds. Zandy, we're all everyone is glued in, and everyone's super excited. The program can only go up from here. We're just hoping that, you know, we're not hoping. We know that Candace is going to do a good job of vetting these guys.
Mm-hmm.
And we know she's going to do a great job of picking the right guy for the job or girl for the job. And we'll see.
Hey, Herb Hand. Herb Hand, 2021
here. Dude, I love to see Herb. Oh, my God. For people who don't know, Herb Hand was our O-line coach at Vandy, went on to coach at Penn State, then Auburn. Now he's at Texas. Before that, was at Tulsa, was an OC. Or was he head coach? He was an OC.
He was a head coach.
He's never been a head
coach. I thought he was.
He was?
He was interim, I thought.
Maybe that's what it was.
But dude's a hell of a coach, man. Super respected among the O-line community. Everyone knows who Herb is.
Likeable.
Very likable. The guy can go up there and spit M&M or Slim Shady. Like, he can go up there and spit Vanilla Ice like you've never seen. I mean, you just give him a beat, he'll go up there and he'll freestyle, he'll rap. I'll just put it this way. He could walk into any house in America and find some shit to talk about. Like, the dude has got stories for days. He tells us a story where he held in a sneeze and he caused himself a brain hemorrhage and almost died. The dude's nuts, man. He's got stories for days.
You guys should get him on this, but I'll tell you what, he used to come over for recruiting visits when I was getting recruited to come to Vandy, because my folks and him would always go out to eat. And I'll tell you, the toilets were clogged for days in my house because Herb Hand was just letting loose. You know what? Hey, if Herb listens to this, man, I think he'd be a great hire. I'm dead honest with you. He's a likable guy, and he's got a great, I think, persona in the industry. I think he's got a lot of people that would follow him. So he would be interesting. Like, that would be the only coordinator that I would make an exception for. Right. So
yeah, dead honest. I would love it, man. Dead honest. I would love to see her best. You know, I had seven coaches when I was in the league, and dude, Herb is up there with damn near every one of them. He shits on half of them. Like, no joke.
Literally. Yeah.
Like literally he, literally, he'd be a hell of a pick for Vandy. I think he'd be a great coach.
It'd be fun.
Well, anyways, Jake, we wrap it up off every episode, man. We like to anchor down. Let's get an anchor down before we close. And until next time, man, anchor down, brother.
Anchor down, my friends. Thanks for having me.
Anchor down. Thanks for being here with us.
All right, boys. Thanks, boys.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.